Stir podcast, where politics, religion, and history collide, and it's not always polite. Fred Trump was a major real estate magnate in New York City. During the 1920s, in his younger years, he was arrested for participating in an attack on police perpetrated by the Ku Klux Klan. In the 1950s, folk singer Woody Guthrie wrote about Old Man Trump, his landlord, Fred Trump, who he charged with not renting to black people and stirring up racial hatred. In 1973, Fred Trump and his son Donald, who was excited to follow in his father's footsteps, were sued by the U.S. Justice Department for violating the Fair Housing Act for refusing to rent to blacks in their New York properties. This was Donald Trump's public debut, though it wasn't his first rodeo when it came to housing discrimination complaints. One of Donald Trump's early projects was an apartment complex in Cincinnati. In 1969, a local civil rights organization was able to uncover, using a white tester, that this apartment complex had a policy of not renting to blacks. Under pressure, this apartment complex was integrated. A former president of the Trump Plaza Hotel and Casino, John O'Donnell, has claimed that Trump looked down on his black casino employees, stating to him regarding one of them, "I think the guy is lazy. And it's probably not his fault because laziness is a trait in blacks. It really is. I believe that. It's not anything they can control." This statement is one Trump himself has admitted he may have said, although he says he does not recall the conversation. In 1989, a white jogger was severely beaten, stabbed, and raped in New York's Central Park. The case sparked a great deal of outrage in New York City. Five young men, including four African Americans and one Latino, were charged with the crime using confessions that may have been coerced and contradicted each other. Donald Trump posted an ad in all of the city's newspapers urging the return of the death penalty and that the accused young men should be very afraid, inflaming tensions in the city. The men were later convicted of the attack and served their sentences in prison. In 2001, another man, who was a convicted murderer and serial rapist, volunteered a confession to being the Central Park jogger's attacker, and that he did it alone. DNA evidence confirmed this, and subsequent DNA testing exonerated the five young men who served several years in prison for a crime that, come to find out, they did not commit. Their convictions were vacated, and in 2014, they settled a lawsuit with the city of New York for $41 million. Donald Trump continued to declare that the Central Park Five were guilty, despite the DNA evidence, and maintained that their convictions should never have been vacated. So when Donald Trump stated that former President Barack Obama may not have been born in this country, or that Mexicans are rapists, or that a judge could not be impartial towards him because he's a Mexican, or that blacks live in hell, or that a grieving mother of an army captain killed in action couldn't speak because she was a Muslim, or that the white supremacist terror attack in Charlottesville, Virginia on August 12th was the fault of both sides and would not call out Nazis and white supremacists specifically. This is who Donald Trump is, who he was raised to be, and how he has always been. As Maya Angelou once said, "When someone shows you who they are, believe them the first time." I am your host, Jay Poole. Last weekend in Charlottesville, Virginia, a swarm of white supremacists descended on the town in anticipation of a Unite the Right rally to oppose a Confederate statue of Robert E. Lee being removed in the town. On the night of Friday, August 11th, a horde of young Nazis, Nazi sympathizers, and other white supremacists with tiki torches gathered at the University of Virginia, chanting, "We will not be replaced. Jews will not replace us." Blood and Soil, and White Lives Matter, ending in a violent clash with a smaller group of counter-protesters. The next day, Nazis, the Ku Klux Klan, and other white supremacist groups showed up in Charlottesville, some of whom were wearing riot gear, many of whom were armed. A number of them, including former Grand Wizard David Duke, were praising Donald Trump. Counter-protesters were also there, speaking out against the white supremacists. During this, 20-year-old James Alex Fields Jr., a resident of Maumee, Ohio, right outside Toledo, drove his Dodge Challenger into the counter-protest, killing 32-year-old Heather Heyer, a resident of Greene County, Virginia, and injuring 19 others. While observing the event, a police helicopter went down, killing two Virginia State Troopers, Burke M. M. Bates and H. J. Cullen. The killing of Heather Heyer and injuries to so many others is an act of white supremacist domestic terrorism by a white supremacist terrorist. Most Americans of every color were shocked and outraged at the attack, and were sickened at the images of Nazis and white supremacists with tiki torches, and video of the attacker ramming his car into the crowd. Many political and cultural voices on the left, center, and right spoke out against the terror attack. Even the U.S. Justice Department, led by Jeff Sessions, who has had his own history with race, declared the incident an act of domestic terror. But the attack also exposed massive failures in leadership. This is what Donald Trump said the day of the attack.
We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides. On many sides. It's been going on for a long time in our country. Not Donald Trump, not Barack Obama. This has been going on for a long, long time. There's no place in America. What is vital now is a swift restoration of law and order and the protection of innocent lives.
Bowing to pressure, this is what he said on Tuesday.
Racism is evil, and those who cause violence in its name are criminals and thugs, including the KKK, neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and other hate groups that are repugnant to everything we hold dear as Americans. We are a nation founded on the truth that all of us are created equal. We are equal in the eyes of our Creator. We are equal under the law.
But then a couple of days later, he took back what he said on Tuesday and reiterated how he really felt.
Blame, yes. I think there's blame on both sides. You look at both sides. I think there's blame on both sides, and I have no doubt about it, and you don't have any doubt about it either. And if you reported it accurately, you would say. And you had some very bad people in that group. But you also had people that were very fine people on both sides.
No, we don't know it, because that's not how it happened. Ideology matters. One side is for hate and has a very, very long history of violence against those they see as inferior peoples and white people who defend them. The other side does not. Even anarchist groups like Antifa are anti-fascists. So while they do not espouse a doctrine of nonviolence, their ideology is not one of hate leading to over a century's worth of violence. Also, only one side came in with riot gear, and only one side chose to drive hundreds of miles away from home just to run over a group of people with a car because they hated what that group represented. It is telling that the only group that was happy with Trump's statement was the white supremacists. The Nazis rejoiced because he didn't call them out by name as the bad guys. Some of them were very fine people. According to Dante, the darkest places in hell are reserved for those who maintain their neutrality in times of moral crisis. Silence is consent. Equivalency is consent. Whataboutism is consent. Appealing to moderation is consent.
Both sides
is consent.
Many sides
is consent. Pick a side. There is no both sides. There is no middle ground. Moral equivalency elevates evil to the level of good and exchanges the truth for a lie. Moral equivalency only gives comfort to the terrorists. Trump is giving comfort to white supremacy. Trump is giving comfort to terrorists. Potstirrer Podcast will be back after this. Did you know for today's episode? In the 2002 film Minority Report, police in the year 2054 use a panel of psychics to predict if individuals will commit crimes in the future and imprison them based on what is termed pre-crime. Tom Cruise plays the chief of the police pre-crime unit, who is then targeted by the very unit he's in charge of based on a vision by these psychics that he will murder a man he does not know within 36 hours. This science fiction movie explores the themes of free will and predetermination. If we could somehow predict crimes before they happen, would using this capability be ethical? Now, did you know that convicted criminals in many states are sentenced in part using computer programs that their authors claim will predict their risk of committing crimes in the future? According to the Marshall Project and ProPublica, several U.S. states, such as California, Florida, Pennsylvania, Virginia, and Wisconsin, use these risk assessments as a factor in decisions regarding rehabilitation options, probation, incarceration, and parole. The assessment is based on a survey with questions regarding previous convictions, as well as questions that are unrelated to one's criminal past, such as employment, education level, age, marital status, and housing stability. There are even questions about parents' criminal history. These questions are said to predict future criminal behavior. Proponents state that these applications help to alleviate prison overcrowding while keeping the public safer. Also, by the judicial system using statistics instead of human instinct, this method introduces science and removes bias from the process. But critics point out that these tests, while statistical, essentially evaluate convicts based on crimes they have not committed and introduce additional racial and economic bias in the judicial process. With studies that have demonstrated that blacks tend to be arrested and convicted of drug possession at a much higher rate than whites, even though use rates are equal among the races, and similar disparities exist for other crimes, this type of assessment only compounds the problem. Also, these questions are implicitly biased against racial minorities and people of lower economic classes, who are more likely to have adversarial encounters with police regardless of criminal behavior, are more likely to have family members who have criminal pasts due to the history of economic and racial discrimination in the judicial system, are more likely to suffer from unemployment or underemployment, and are more likely to be transient or homeless. There are also two other issues that should raise alarm about the widespread use of these tests. First, the companies that sell these tests, such as Northpoint, consider their algorithms proprietary and do not release them publicly. These are statistical tests that cannot be peer-reviewed or independently evaluated for systematic validation errors, In other words, people's futures are being decided in part based on a test they cannot fight against in court, because how results are determined is not being made public. Secondly, these risk assessment tests might not even be accurate. For example, in Broward County, Florida, almost 45% of Black defendants labeled high risk by North Point's test do not reoffend, while close to 48% of white defendants labeled low risk do go on to commit more crimes. Child molesters, thieves with multiple convictions, habitual drunk drivers, and other career criminals have been declared low risk, potentially because they have jobs, spouses, and stable homes. While one-time offenders convicted of petty crime have been declared high risk simply because of the family they were born into. How does this foray into pre-crime make anyone safer? Now, back to Pot Stirrer Podcast. Both Democratic and Republican politicians condemned the attack and the idea that both sides were at fault. Although many Republicans were more reticent to call out Trump for putting Nazis on the same level as those who protest racism and hate, some have remained silent. And my congressional representative, Steve Chabot, protected by the power of gerrymandering, has repeated loads of disinformation, and in his blog has gone in harder on the peaceful counter-protesters than the Nazis, KKK, and white supremacists. Like Trump, Steve Chabot is giving comfort to terrorists. But Trump is not the cause of this. He is merely a consequence. There's been a notable response from the business, nonprofit, and arts communities to Trump's response to the Charlottesville attack. Members of Trump's business council resigned, starting with the CEO of Merck, Kenneth Frazier, and many CEOs followed, leading to the group being disbanded. The President's Art and Humanities Council also all resigned except for one due to his response to Charlottesville. And Cleveland Clinic and the American Cancer Society both backed out of events scheduled at Mar-a-Lago. But one notable group appeared slow to respond. Trump's Evangelical Council, his group of evangelical advisors, held steady. It took until Friday, August 18th, for even one of them to announce his resignation. A.R. Bernard, pastor of the Christian Cultural Center, a megachurch in New York City, announced his resignation Friday, giving a vague reason of a conflict in values, without specifically calling out Trump's response to Charlottesville. No others have stepped down as of this recording, and by their silence are supporting the president and his agenda. CEOs and artists have more of a moral compass than the Christian leaders on Trump's council. So because you are lukewarm, neither hot nor cold, I am about to spit you out of my mouth. Revelation 3:16. While Charlottesville and the events surrounding it exposed the rise of Nazis, Ku Klux Klan, and other white supremacists and the political and religious leaders that give them legitimacy and comfort, it also showed that there is still hope for this country, both the American people as a whole and the American church. In Charlottesville, dozens of clergy have trained in nonviolent protest through a group mobilized by local pastors and ministers called Congregate Seville. There were clergy willing to put their bodies on the line to nonviolently confront the white supremacists who were demonstrating that day, and that they did. There's also an increasing awakening among many Christians, including many white Christians, that some of our leadership, the silence and the moral equivalency of some Christian leaders, and the unwillingness to specifically call out the alt-right and others linked to white supremacy have deviated from God and moved towards money and power, and that is no longer acceptable. There's also hope for the millennial generation. Yes, there were some that took up tiki torches and attacked counter-protesters during the University of Virginia incident. There were also some that were in riot gear and were armed on August 12th. James Fields Jr. is only 20 years old, too young, much like other terrorists. But there were young men and women of all races and religions who are standing up for others, for the diversity and freedom America stands for. They have protested in support of women's rights, in support of Black Lives Matter, in support of racial and religious minorities, in support of LGBT rights, and against intolerance and white supremacy. They have pushed for the page to be turned on the old hatreds, over the statues that represent a history that never was. They have agitated for progress. Even through her pain, Heather Heyer's mother, Susan Breaux, was able to celebrate her daughter's life. She said this.
Because here's the message. Although Heather was a caring and compassionate person, so are a lot of you. A lot of you go that extra mile. And I think the reason that what happened to Heather has struck a chord is because we know that what she did is achievable. We don't all have to die. We don't all have to sacrifice our lives. They tried to kill my child to shut her up. Well, guess what? You just magnified her. So here's what I want to happen. You ask me, what can I do? So many caring people, pages of stuff I'm going through. I'm reading pages of pages, how she's touching the world. I want this to spread. I don't want this to die. This is just the beginning of Heather's legacy. This is not the end of Heather's legacy.
Yes. There's a lot to lament in this country, and there's been a lot of damage to our political and moral institutions that has been generations in the making. But there is also hope. People are beginning to wake up. People are getting active. People are getting mobilized and raising their voices in ways that haven't been so prevalent in a long time. Let us push on and continue to resist. In the words of Jesus Christ in John 14:27, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid." Folks, be encouraged.
Hot Stirrer Podcast is on iTunes and Google Play. Subscribe, and if you enjoy the show, please leave a review. Like Pot Stirrer Podcast on Facebook. Follow the show on Twitter at Pot Stirrer Cast and Instagram at Pot Stirrer Podcast. I'm Jay Poole. Let's fight for America's future, because freedom is not free.